Okay, and we are finishing up this week with the Nachash. And the answer is next week, we're going to go back to Sefer Ovadia, which we have forsaken for quite some time now. So I wanted to begin with Shaddai. Shaddai is, as we mentioned a few times ago, is a kind of like a quasi-acceptable commentary from the 19th century. So it's Italian, Shmuel David Luzzatto. And we had seen already his discussion of the possible, in brief, the possible allegory involved with the Nachash. The Kohen Rabbah, I'm going to go over what he said over there. It was very brief. Because of Barbanel, who says that the snake did not speak with the woman. The woman saw him eating, and that he didn't die, and that she had this internal dialogue within herself, whether she should eat or not. Okay? He doesn't like that, the Shaddai, because it would seem that according to that, what does it mean that the snake was cunning, and why should it be cursed? And then he quotes the Zoroastrian scriptures, which say that there was that Ahriman, the wicked god, disguised himself in the form of a snake, and seduced Adam and Chava to sin. He brings down then that some of the our sages hold that the ancient serpent was the Satan, and others say that the Satan used the snake in order to work his way with Chava, and ultimately with Adam. Now, so the Shaddai goes on, he speaks later on about the curse and the punishment of the snake. And he says, because it busted Dalin, but it says, Ora Tamikol Behema. He says, Angel, you can't ask where and that the snake should be more cursed. In other words, it says, Ora Tamikol Behema. Sounds like the other animals were cursed, and the serpent is more cursed. So he says, you can't ask that, because he says, Arur doesn't mean a curse. It means a lack of good. It means something which is afflicted and suffering. So when it says, Arur Atemikol Behema, it's going to mean that, means that the Nachash is not cursed, but is going to lack goodness more than any other animal lacks goodness. And in what respect? Of a par tochel. You're going to eat dirt. So the Shaddai says, you're going to lick dirt as if you eat it, and that's how he deals with the issue of the fact that snakes don't eat dirt. And then he says, but it's possible, and it's an interesting perspective, it's possible that the ancients did think that the serpent, that the snake does eat dirt, and is sustained by dirt. Like Bud says in Yeshaya, that Yeshaya Perek Samachay Pasukhofay, the Nachash Afar Lachmo, its bread is the dirt. So the Torah said, you are going to eat dirt using colloquial perception. In other words, it's not the pshat that the Torah is saying, you're going to eat dirt as really going to be eating dirt, but rather, you are going to be put into a position that people look at you as if you're a dirt eater. Is that understood? You understand what I'm saying? Anybody get that?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Torah is using, like Rashi says many times, Lashon B'nei Adam. It's using human terminology, even though the human terminology in itself is not precise, but in order to be able to make this point. I see I have a message from Ron here. Let's see what that says. So Ron wants to know, what does the Zoroastrians have to say have relevance to us? The answer is nothing, but it's cute. And then Ron asks, what about this, he says nice about something, but I'm not sure about what. And then where he says that the question is, what does it mean, language of man? So I think we discussed that. The language of man means in this case that it has the, he took on, it's how people were perceived in Nachash. And it says, isn't that what Slifkin says about the eagles, etc.? You have to tell me what Slifkin says about the eagles, because I don't know what he says about the eagles. And then he says that, what about the kidneys? Slifkin does not say that about the kidneys. Slifkin says that Chazal were wrong about the kidneys. What Shadal is saying is not that Chazal are wrong. Chazal didn't necessarily express an opinion about it. It's the Torah which he's using, colloquial understanding of, I'm sorry, colloquial language in order to express how people will perceive the Nachash. Chazal didn't necessarily understand that at all. So then he says, he says afterwards, another possibility, before I get to Ron's next question, which is that when the Torah said, Ofar Tochel, or Ofar Lachmo in Yeshaya, it means that which was within the dirt, right? And it says that this is parallel a couple of psukim later, where it says, Be'itzavon Tochlena, in anguish or in sadness or in anxiety, you're going to eat, you other are going to eat. So it doesn't mean you're going to eat Tochlena. The land is going to be cursed or loses good because of you, and you're going to eat it with anguish or anxiety. Now, if you take that pasuk and translate it literally, it means you're going to eat the land. You're going to eat the land, and he says that can't be. Obviously, it means you're going to eat the fruit of the land. So when it says afar tochel by the nachash, can also mean you're going to eat of what the land produces, but that which is very low to the ground. So therefore, according to that, it means that which is associated with the, like that which is associated with the ground. Now, Ron asks, how could the Torah use a colloquial understanding during a time when humankind was only two people? The Torah was using that colloquialism at the time of Matan Torah, which is 2,448 years later. And it's representing the curse which Hashem bestowed on Nachash, which is quite possible that nobody actually heard, because Hashem didn't have to tell this to anybody at the time, but the nature of the curse is being described to us many years later in this manner, and by that time, that was the perception which human beings had of the Nachash. So that would depend on whether this was this stated by Hashem at the time. Even then you might have a question, but even then, one could have an answer to it, but I would say, tend to think that it was incorporated into when the Torah was written, not necessarily earlier than that. Now, the I want to go into something which Shadal says in Pasuk Chaf Dalet after the whole story. It's a fascinating thing which he writes. He says, this story, all of it, any intelligent person will see how degrading it is, and how it contradicts the perfection of the Creator. How so? That his handiwork should be ruined shortly after he produced it. And that Adam changed to another person from whom he then was that which he was originally intended to be. That to the point that merely after he's created, he's going to have to give him this eternal curse and banish him from the place which he prepared to be his residence. Therefore, the great Chachamim, now he doesn't mean the great Chachamim necessarily Chazal, but he says great Chachamim, explain the story as being a parable and a riddle which alludes to other matters which have to do with philosophy. And this is, he said, so that sounds already, as Ron might say, Slifkin-esque, right? No, he's not saying the Rambam. He doesn't say who it is specifically. But in any event, I have to say, in order to prevent us from drawing the wrong conclusion here. He said that it means that not that they're going to deny the truth of the story as it is written. And then he quotes the Karim. The Karim was, of course, one of the Rishonim. He says, even if we find in the Torah many things that the Chachamim agree that they allude to higher matters, lofty matters, and intellectual matters, such as the story of the Garden of Eden and the four rivers, which are problematic, and etc. Because of this, we will not deny that they existed and were literally true. In other words, the material plane and the philosophical or transcendent ideas parallel each other. It's not that one is a parable for the other, but rather one is a material crystallization of the other. And he says that these chachamim, however, he says these chachamim explain the matter as an allusion, a reference to philosophical matters, which Shaddai says them are not true in and of themselves, and most people don't derive any benefit from knowing them. And he says, the point is, it's not understood why Hashem would want all of this episode to occur, and why they bring, in other words, the philosophical ideas are esoteric, and they're subject to question in and of themselves. So why would Hashem bring this all about with this to curse his handiwork? If it all has to do with just the four elements, which is, of course, Greek philosophy, fire, air, water, and dirt, or even, he says, if it has to do with the kohos hanefesh of a human being, the power, the character traits. Now, of course, for us people who believe in Mussar, this is like a heretical line, because Mussar is the be-all and end-all of what life is all about. But Shadal, he was Italian. He wasn't about Mussar necessarily. And so therefore he goes on and says the follows. He says, I believe that this is the more logical way to understand. He says, a man senses that he is born to toil and that he is destined to many incidents which are going to be harmful to him, and to much anguish and anxiety, much more than other creatures. And a person complains about this very often, and he has thoughts against Hashem and Hashem's relationship with him. And all this, he says, is really not true and not just, because Hashem made man higher than all other animals by creating him in his image as a master of forces, and gave him understanding to understand and perceive and to work with his free will and not to be governed by nature, and everything for his own good. However, out of the knowledge that Hashem granted him, and out of this control and governance which Hashem gave him over his own free will, it happens that sometimes he chooses bad and causes himself bad, and he expands his desires and expands his anguish, and his foolishness distorts his pathway, and he gets angry at Hashem. So he says, man, in this respect, is an ingrate. He's not grateful to when he's an ingrate when his complaints against Hashem. And he's not thinking properly to say, well, Hashem gave me this great and vast and precious gift, which is the understanding with which he graced me. I have many great things and great favors he bestowed upon me as a result of it. And why should I complain if I caused the damage to myself? After all, if you would tell a human being, I don't know if this is true anymore, what he's about to say, but he says, if you tell a human being, would you like to turn into an animal? There is no clear doubt that he would not want that. I think that nowadays, actually, you'll probably find a lot of people who wouldn't mind being animals if they were given the opportunity. Perhaps I'm wrong. I think that our regard of our intellect and our capacity to enjoy our intellect today is much lower than it was in the early in the mid 19th century. So I don't know if most everybody would agree with this the way he assumed. But he said, no, we want to change an animal. So why are you upset at the anguish that you have, which comes to you because you are a person who possesses understanding and you're not an animal? So Hashem wanted to show man that that it's as if he knows the at the end of the matter, that he would not, that man would not want to eat from the Eitz HaDaat, because he would know that he get much anguish from this. And he said, so to man, don't eat from it. You're not going to want it. You're not going to want the result of it. And Adam did not pay attention. And he was seduced by the seducer, whatever it was, and who told him that he's going to get great power benefit from it. And he ate from the fruit, and his eyes were open. And this caused him all of his toil and anger and his pains without limit. And they're all considered to come to him as a result of, they all come to him in truth as a result of the nature of creation. But Hashem informed of him of it as if it was a curse, as if it's a punishment on that he ate from the Eitz HaDaat. And all the curse of the serpent is only to tell him what his nature is about, because this is exactly what he was created for to begin with. Because the snake was cunning, and he went straight up as a human being, and he spoke, right? And he was only created for that purpose, for that moment in Gan Eden. And after man cursed Adam and his wife on the rebellion, so the Nachash should be cursed also, because he caused seduce them to sin. Because if he would not be cursed, so then Adam and Chava would assume that Hashem is favoring him. But he was only a unique singularity for that time and place. So it comes into the story that all of this was like, I guess what we could call, if this is the right term, a morality play. But not a play. It was more than that. In other words, it was all, I'll very often say, when I discuss this from a Ishbitz, Lublin, or Tzadik point of view, that Adam was framed. Hashem knew he was going to sin and put him into a situation where he was going to sin, and it was necessary for him to see for a fleeting moment what perfection could be, so he had the frame of reference. And then he was put out into the world to go and, you know, try and work himself back to that at some point in the eventual future. And that was a frame up, and that the Bechira was not a standard 50-50 balance Bechira, but the overwhelming odds were that he was going to sin, and Hashem intended it to be that way. That's what how I normally explain it. But the way the Shaddai is explaining it, it's slightly different. He's saying, it's not that before the chait, Adam was different, like we understand from most Sfarim. Before the chait, Adam was the same. Adam was an imperfect creation, and he was going to die. And all those things which eventually happened to him were really intrinsically part of his nature. Hashem wanted to show him, and he created a singularity of the unique Nachash, and with all the things which went along with that story, in order to display to Adam what is actually his nature. His nature is to eat from the Eitz HaDaat. His nature is to choose things. And his nature is to eat from the to choose things. That has ramifications. And those ramifications will be like the ramifications which Hashem describes when he describes the chait of Adam. And that Klola, the curse of Adam. So again, according to what the what Shaddai is saying, Adam's nature didn't change, but the entire thing was a metaphor, but a metaphor which took place in a real material and real time frame to teach him what he, in a microcosm, what his existence was all about. I'm almost finished with what he says. He says that it comes out of this story that man should not complain on his toil, because his toil becomes as a result of his advantage in a higher level, that he knows good and evil, and he acts according to his will and not according to his nature, and the advantage a person would desire if we asked him. He would not want to switch himself to being an animal who eats grasses. So it says, if he ate of his own volition from the eighth adas. And the advantage which comes from all this is clear, that man should recognize that all of his negatives, all the things which we form, which are perceived as wicked or bad or evil or misfortunes, come as a result, as a byproduct of the great favor with which Hashem bestowed on him, which is to give him intellect and intelligence. And a person should be happy in his lot and give praise and thanks to Hashem on the good and on the bad. And this advantage of which we learn from this, the advantage of having the story take place, is it would not be difficult to be for the grasp and perception even of the masses of the nation, and even in ancient days, when you reduce, I shouldn't say reduce, when you what's the word I'm looking for tzimtzum. What's the English word for tzimtzum?
Contract.
I'm sorry?
Contract.
Contract. We have contract. There's a better word which is on my mind, the tip of my tongue, and that's not coming to me right now. I don't remember. But anyway, contract is a good word. And it means here in the sense that you crystallize and concentrate this message in this morality play again, in this real time actual transaction, and even the masses and even ancient days can understand this. They'll say our toil which we get in this world comes from our eating from the tree of knowledge, but if our forefathers would not have eaten from the tree, we and our children or our grandchildren would be like animals or like babies who never knew the difference between good and bad. So it's good that he ate from the eighth of das, and we have no reason to complain. So this is a very interesting approach. I'm not saying that it's the right approach or even that it has any validity in it, but it is a novel approach, which I find to be very creative, which is that everything which took place was in order to instill in Adam real, but that's the word I'm looking for, which is better than that, a real, much more tangible and obvious manner, nation lessons about his nature, which later humankind throughout the generations were able to perceive as well. So Shabbat's conclusion, according to his approach, is that the Nachash was a real creation. It wasn't cursed in the sense that it had to be cursed because it was a singularity anyway. It was a temporary creature for the purpose of making this elaborate lesson clear to Adam. And that, as a result, when it was finished with its task, it was eliminated, but it was eliminated in a way that it seemed like it was cursed in order to be able to say that there was justice and was balance, and things worked themselves out in that respect. Okay, that is Shaddai. So then I wanted to actually quote from Reb Shamshon Paul Hirsch and his approach to this. And I took the wrong volume of the Hirsch Chumash. I'm not going to do that right now. If we have time, I'll come back to it later. But let me just tell you what the Malvin says. So the Malvin says here, give me a second here. Let me just find a place. Yeah. So the Malbim also picks up on that, which it sounds like the other animals were cursed, right? So he said, it seems clear that the other animals were cursed as well. And the Nachash was cursed more than they were. So, just like man, so he explains, man, as man goes down from his level, everything else which is connected to man goes down as well. Shaddai was very, very, I don't know if anti-mystical is the right term, it's certainly non-mystical. And so this notion which we have from Kabbalah that all of creation is linked to humanity. And when humanity goes up, creation goes up. When humanity goes down, creation goes down. That's not a perspective Shaddai would have been necessarily happy adopting. But the Malbim, being a Mukubal in himself, in of himself, says that when a person goes down from his level, so also animals which are contingent on man go down as well. And the Chayot HaSodeh, the non-domestic animals, were more cursed, so to speak. They went down an even greater level than the domestic animals. That's why it says, Mikol HaBehema or Mikol Chayot HaSodeh. But now they're going to be cursed more than the domestic animals, but even from the non-domesticated animals. Why? How is that? Because Chazal say that initially, Chazal say the year they learn out that the days of the gestation of an animal are cursed. This is a little bit clear, complicated, so let me skip this part. So he says that the animals were cursed also in the behemoths were cursed in their getting the anguish of pregnancy and gestation, and the chayos evidently were cursed more in their not being domesticated, they're having to find their forage for their food to a much greater extent, and the snake went beyond that. That initially went upright, and now he was pushed down. And the way he explains afar tochel is that he's going to be afruri b'tivo. He's going to have the nature of dirt. Not that he's going to eat dirt, but his nature is the nature of something which is dirty, repugnant. You know, as recently as Harry Potter, right? The snake represents that which is repugnant and repulsive and something which is always held in suspicion as being dirt. Okay, so they have, and it says that it's going to be all the days of your life. It's interesting what he says. It says that means even the Yemot HaMashiach, because the rivalry between man and serpent, that'll stop when Mashiach comes. There's a prophecy in Yeshayah. That's where it says that the lamb and the wolf will live together. It also says that the child, the baby, will play with the snake. But the dirtiness, that low quality of the snake, is eternal. Even at that time of the ultimate redemption, the snake remains a dirty thing. And it seems evident that that's because cunning is something which is supposed to be repugnant. It's sometimes necessary to be cunning. Yaakov Avinu said, Lavan is cunning, I'm just as cunning as he is. But cunning is something which remains repugnant. Now, it's interesting, unlike that which is completely wicked, Reuven writes, says foxes are not considered to be repugnant. Yeah, but it says the Nachash was Aru Mikol Chayas HaSodeh. Whatever the Nachash was, it was more cunning than even the foxes. And so, and I don't know, the fact that foxes are linked with cunning, I think that's more in the parables. I'm not sure what, in real life, how actual cunning they are. But I don't know. But in any event, so be as it may. So I think that that's the shot, and that remains something which is repugnant forever. And then he goes on to explain the next pasuk about the enmity, but I'm going to leave that alone for a moment. And The Malbim also has a long discussion. I see we're not going to be able to finish this week. Malbim also has a long discussion like Shaddai at the end of the whole story about the message from this whole story. So I'm going to start it today and go for another 5 minutes, and then I see Adam, I won't be able to get back to Ovadia yet. And I lied when I said this was going to be the conclusion. I apologize. So, but this is a worthwhile scene. He says that which caused to, just again, just beginning, because it's a long piece, that matter which befell our first father and the day is created, it continues to exist until today in his children. But that which happened with man at the time of creation in three distinct bodies, man, woman, and serpent, today it takes place in one body that possesses the three elements, the neshama, which is placed within it, and its powers, which are the intellect and understanding, etc., that is man. And his body, which is flesh and bone, that is woman. And this, he says, is the connection between man and woman is made 40 days before Yetzirat Avlad. Actually, he says, the way he learns that, you know, says that the announcer goes up in Shamayim, goes up in Shamayim 40 days before the world is created, before it is for a child is formed, who he's going to marry. So the way the Malam is learning it, it happens on the 40th day after conception. Because on the 40th day after conception, we know that's when the neshama is supposed to enter the fetus, to begin entering the fetus, and that's why abortion becomes much more problematic after the 40th day of gestation. So be that as it may, he says that when it says that the 40 days they announce the shidduch, according to the Malbim, I don't know if he means that this is the Pashmashan in the Gemara, or this is alluded to in the Gemara, it means the shidduch between body and soul. Bas Ploni Uploni means this body is going to this soul. That's what takes place after 40 days. So that's that connection. And that's the neshama goes down according to the material body it's supposed to receive, which is now forming from the union of the sperm and the egg, and it's brought before God, who tells it, determines whether it's going to be smart or stupid, etc., etc. And the goof in the body is alluded to in Chava, and this also represents the Greek philosophical idea of Tzur and Chomer, idea and substance, which is Adam and Ishto, until how they unite, he goes and describes a little bit. And then he says, the powers which are found in the body, which are harmful, which are fantasy, and that which arouses, and that which desires, they are the snakes, which are given to other men and the man and woman to serve them in a straight way when he uses them for good and for the satisfaction of the soul. And Chazal say, woe to the great servant which we lost when the Nachash was cursed. Because if not for the fact that Adam was cursed, each person would have two snakes. One he would send them to bring for him precious stones and jewels. And the Malbim explains this on the allegorical level, that would be the power of imagery and arousal, which desire for riches in our state would be tall good if he used it in order to do tzedakah and kindness, etc. And the other snake, say Chazal, he would use in order to fertilize his field and his yard, and his garden. And Mama explains it is that's the power of desire, which should be used in order to prepare one's food, which one requires, which is the fruit of the garden of the field. And Hashem put in man in Gan Eden, he put all of these things into Olam Hazeh, which is the place where man resides. And there he gave him three types of trees, which correspond to these three the three qualities of man, woman, and snake. So I'm going to stop here for tonight because it's getting late. But the point I want to make, and continue on next time we get together, either Thursday or Motzei Shabbos, we have to Shem, depending on the availability, is that the Malbim also had this problem which Shadal had, which what the heck are we supposed to learn from this in a way which makes it something which can we can grasp even if we're not great philosophers dealing with esoteric issues. And Shadal gave his own approach. The Malbim is giving his approach, which is to say that this cosmic, this material battle between and strife between Adam, Chava, and the Nachash is a microcosm of what takes place within a human being. So it's very similar in this respect, both the Shadal and the Malbim, except that Shadal is saying that not latching on to the so much as internal kochos and nefesh, he didn't like that idea, as to the nature of humanity. Whereas the Malbim is now seems to go more to the strength of the internal kochos which a person possesses. I'm not sure how much different they're going to be in the end. Be that as it may, again, one last point in that regard, that both of them understand that the Nachash and Adam and Chava are all real, and the episode was real, and it took place. What they're trying to grasp is, why should this happen? What is humanity supposed to learn from this, except that Hashem Chas V'Sholom messed things up? Okay, so we'll stop here for tonight. Are there any specific questions anybody wants to raise?
The Shadal Rabbi?
Yes?
The Shadal seems to be exactly, almost the opposite of the Rambam and more Nebuchim.
What respect?
In that, when the Rambam brings up the whole story of Adam and Chava, he says that somebody asked him about this whole thing, and it seems like they were almost rewarded for that their sins were really like a reward in a certain sense. And it seems sort of what the Shadal is kind of saying here, is that they gained benefit from these punishments. Or am I missing something?
I don't know, benefit, there's a message then from the punishment. I'm not sure okay. Benefit is the right term. What do you mean? I don't recall what the Rambam says.
The Rambam
says, before the
chait, that Adam only know emes v'sheker.
Right.
And afterwards, he got confused by tov v'ra.
Right.
And so it sounded like that it was, but from the Shadal, and maybe it was, I just misunderstood what you were saying, but it sounded like it was a good thing by the Shadal that now Adam know what tov v'ra were.
No, he always, according to Shadal, he always knew Tov V'Ra. It's not like, you're right,
Before
the Chait, it was only Emes and Shek. It was them Bechira before the Chait and after the Chait.
Right. Okay.
Right, according to Shadal, it's the same Bechira.
Okay.
But
just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, we're not going like the Rambam. Very good than the Rambam.
The whole thing about being like an animal sounded more like Emes V'Sheker as opposed to Tov V'Ra, because animals don't really know. This is a good thing, this is a bad thing.
What do you mean in that being like an animal? He's saying that Adam was shown here, you're not an animal. But
right.
Not being an animal comes with advantages.
But beforehand,
but also some benefits.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, no, I hear.
Okay.
I'm just tired, I guess.
Okay. So these are different, it's a little bit of a, you know, tough stuff.
Yeah.
All right, guys, so have a good week. Good
Shabbat.
Thank you very much for listening. Okay, take care. Bye.